Have you ever faced an impossible situation? Anyone face an impossible situation? I can remember I was about 23, 24, and maybe a bit older, 25, and I was facing an impossible situation. I'd started to fall in love with a girl. And the problem was, I remember this event clearly, is that I had a commitment. There was one particular day, and I had a commitment. I had to do something else, and I couldn't get out of it. And all my mates were going to go down the beach with a group of other girls, and the girl that I liked was on this group, and I really wanted to go. I was desperate to go on this event, and I couldn't, and it was just terrible. And I thought, I've got to find a way to get to know this girl better, because she's great. How am I going to do it? And then a week later, I heard that she was moving to Newcastle and was going to live in Newcastle for 9 months. I'm thinking, what's going on? So anyway, 9 months later, she comes back. Cool. I thought, here's my opportunity to impress her. And so over the next 12 months or so, it was quite a long time, I used some of my best comedic material on her. And I haven't been as funny before or since. Like, it was really, really good stuff. It was gold. I didn't get one smile. Not, and I'm thinking, it was an impossible situation. How am I going about it the wrong way? There must be some. This is my best material. She's not even giving me anything. Come on, throw me something here. It's just good stuff. And then I made a crack about myself, a joke at my own expense, and she laughed. I love you, Kate. I wonder if you've faced an impossible situation. I wonder if you're facing an impossible situation now. From time to time, we do face the impossible. You know, it might be something happening at work. There might be a challenge at work where you've got a boss that's giving you a hard time, or a colleague, doesn't matter what you do, you can't seem to get on with them, or clients or customers giving you grief, whatever it is. It seems impossible. Maybe you're under financial pressure. The year hasn't gone as well as you'd hoped. There's bills to pay. Christmas is coming. We don't know how we're going to get over the next month or so. Maybe some of the impossible situations is coming in the relationships you have, and there's something about Christmas that can really highlight these impossible situations. How am I going to tolerate this person over Christmas lunch? How am I going to control the situation so that we don't have the blow-up like we had last year? You know, when we face the impossible situation, we can ask the question, often do ask the question, that we find in verse 34 of this passage, the question that Mary asks, how can this be? Now today we're in this passage of Luke chapter 1 verse 26 to 38. That's the third Sunday of Advent, and we come across Mary. Now, she's a very young person at this stage. We think that she was a teenager, possibly as young as 13, 14, maybe 16, 17, somewhere in that, a very young girl. And she receives this really troubling news. She's going to be with a baby who's also God's son. It's an impossible situation. And she asks, how can this be? Now, I want us to sit with this question for a little bit. How can this be? Because we often move ahead to verse 38 where she says these amazing words and she says, I'm your servant, and we highlight that. But I just want to sit with this question. How can this be? Now, I've never experienced the joy and the difficulty of being pregnant. I guess you're all very pleased to hear that. But I remember walking very closely with Kate three times on that journey. And it's not an easy journey at times. It's great, certainly the end result, but it's not easy. I mean, in the first trimester, the first 3 months, you've got that morning sickness that comes, and man, that was horrible, wasn't it? You get the uncomfortableness, you know, as the belly gets bigger and it starts getting itchy and, you know, like it wasn't me, you know, but the back and other body parts get sore, and then there's the frequent trips to the toilet as the baby's pressing into the bladder, and difficulty sleeping, and this all happens in the 9 months before labour even starts. And I'm not going to go into that. Now Mary gets all of this. She gets all the difficulty and challenge around being pregnant. But she gets much more. I mean, she's a teenager. She's a pregnant teenager. I mean, in our society today, you know, and we're very, as a general rule, accepting society, especially in this area, but there is still a sense of ostracism that goes with becoming pregnant at a really young age. But for Mary, it was so much worse. I mean, she was being raised up in a very strict Jewish culture, where to become pregnant as a teenager was something that was a source of great disgrace and shame. And in her instance, where there was seemingly some doubt over who the father was, it could even lead to her death. And there's a big problem with pregnancy. It's hard to hide. Now Mary knew all of this. She knew what could have been coming her way. She knew about the rejection. She knew about the disgrace. And quite rightly she asks, how can this be? It's an impossible situation. But then in her interaction with the angel, who's God's voice at this time, and she responds in verse 38 with these four beautiful words. Just remember, this is a young girl. I am your servant, she says. From Mary, I think we've got a lot to learn. We've got a lot to learn about how we respond when we're facing the seemingly impossible situation. Today I want to have a look at Mary and I want to focus on three aspects of Mary and how she combated this impossible situation. The first one that I want to focus on is the fact that doubt comes before faith, and that's okay. Doubt comes before faith, and that's okay. Mary asks the question, how can this be? And it becomes much further earlier than her statement of, I am your servant. Now this idea of expressing doubt and then seeing faith is not an original idea in the Bible. If you look at the Psalms, and over half of all the Psalms are laments, and these laments are what they are. They're blokes that are writing out the cries of their heart to God. There's over 70 of them, and if you read any of these laments, you'll read the whole passage, and all the passage will say, God, where are you? God, what are you doing? God, I doubt you. God, why don't you come through? God, you're silent. I'm in the desert. It's awful. How can this be? It's an impossible situation. But if you read all the laments, what you'll also see at the end of each passage is that the psalmist will come to a statement of belief, such as, I am your servant. God, I trust you. God, I believe in you. God, I believe you will do what you need to do for me. God, even though I'm doubting, I'm going to hang on by the tip of my fingernails to you. Doubt comes before faith. Each week here, at the end of the service, and we'll do it again today, we offer prayer. Anyone that wants prayer can come forward and receive prayer. And often we pray for people's physical healing. Now, I've got to be honest with you and say, there's very few times that we see God answer those prayers in the way which we would like him to. God doesn't seem to always bring healing in those moments and those instances of prayer. Now, we have some amazing miracles that have happened. We've seen some answered prayers, but they're in the minority. The majority of time when people come forward for physical healing, we're not seeing a huge change or a huge thing happening there. How can this be? And when I reflect on this, and when I look at the great heroes of faith of who God has used in this era in amazing ways, every single one of them have gone through periods where God has not answered their prayers in the way in which they would have liked. I think of someone like John Wimber, who started a movement of churches called the Vineyard Church Movement. The Vineyard Church Movement is a huge church started in America. John Wimber was the pioneer and leader of that movement, and his passion was to pray for people's healing, for physical healing. Every year for more than 12 months he preached on physical healing. Every Sunday he asked people to come forward and get prayer for physical healing. And in 12 months after preaching on healing every single week, not one single person received healing. And then there was a breakthrough. I don't know why God works like that. But there's something about the perseverance. It's something about the persistence that it builds in us. We're not letting go. And we will keep praying for people's healing. We will keep praying that God would do the amazing. Not because it's about us. Because what we want is a picture of the future kingdom into which we're living, where there is no disease, no sickness, no illness, no mourning, no grief, no pain, nothing else but wholeness. And as followers of Jesus, we're living into that reality now. And we live into that reality in all sorts of ways. We live into that reality in the way we look after our environment. We live into that reality in the way we treat and care for others. We live into that reality in the way we are hospitable. And there's lots of ways we can live into the future reality of God's kingdom. But we also live into that reality by asking for God for healing. And we'll keep doing it. Because doubt comes before faith, and that's okay. So I got a bit excited there. I'm just about out of time and I've got two more points to go. So I'm just going to fly through them real quick if that's okay. I'm doing this for you, Jen and Mark. Yeah. Second point, faith is expressed at taking God at his word. Faith is expressed at taking God at his word. Now Mary's response to interacting with this angel is fear, and fair enough. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about Joseph and I was telling the story of how we were away on holidays in Queensland and this F-18 Hornet jet flew over and we weren't expecting it and it was awesome and scary all at the same time, and maybe that's what it's like when an angel turns up. Well, Joseph had an angel turn up in a dream and he was packing his pants. Well, here Mary gets to meet with the chief angel, one of them, Gabriel. This is bigger than a fighter jet. This is huge. She's scared, and fair enough too. She doesn't know if this is good or a bad thing. This is totally unexpected. And fear was there, but I also suspect that there was some insecurity. Why would God use me? Why would God choose me? I think this is something that many of us battle with from time to time. These feelings of insecurity, these feelings of lack of worth, and it hinders and gets in the way of God truly being able to use us. And we need to discover what God's word actually says. I said I was going to be quick. Here we go. John 1:12 says, "You are my child." John 15:15 says, "You are my friend." 1 Corinthians 6:19-20, God says, "You belong to me." Ephesians 1:5, he says, "You are my child." Colossians 1:14, he says, "You're forgiven." Colossians 2:10, he says, "You are complete in me." Romans 8:35-35 says, "Nothing can separate you from his love." John 15:16 says, "You're chosen to be fruitful." Hebrews 4:16 says, "He is with you and he sends you." Ephesians 2:10 says, "He's your workmanship." Acts 1:8 says, "He sent you." Philippians 4:13 says, "He can do all things because he strengthens you." And 1 Corinthians 3:9 says, "You're his co-worker." I mean, look him up later. Out of breath. God's word says that about you. And in verse 37 of this passage, what do we see? No word from God can ever fail. Don't let insecurity get in the way. Take on board what God is saying to you through his word. Be like Mary. Just trust and obey his word. Third point, what seems impossible to us becomes possible in God. You know, Mary reflects the sort of person that God often uses. There was nothing on her resume that pointed towards God using her in any great way other than she was available and willing to serve. And these are qualities which anyone can bring to the table, this availability and willingness to serve. This week I had an interaction with a lady at the cash register at Aldi. And it broke my heart. Because we got talking, and this is quite unusual for me. I don't like talking to people. I mean, sorry, that's not quite true. I'm a little bit of an introvert. And so sometimes I prefer to have my own space, and that seems to be the case when I'm around strangers. And anyway, we got talking and had a lovely chat, and she asked me what Christmas was looking like for me, and I said, oh, well, it's blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, what's it looking like for you? She said, I'm on my own. My partner of 43 years has just left me. It broke my heart. I tried to offer what words I could. I wanted to give her a hug. I didn't think it was appropriate. I thought, I want to bring it. I want to come to my Christmas, you know. But we've got all this family and, you know, it's too complicated. A bit difficult. I got home, I told Kate. She said, just invite her. I should have. And I thought about it, and I thought, you know, my brain wasn't working fast enough. And I thought about it afterwards, and I thought, you know, she'd gone, and, you know, I'm driving around, I'm looking out for her, I want to see her again. And I thought about it afterwards, and I thought, well, the community garden's having a lunch on the 21st of December. I could have invited her to that. She could have experienced great community. And, the Keens having a Christmas dinner sometime, and I'm invited. I'm sure you all are too. I don't know. Everyone's invited. Yeah, I'm not in trouble now, am I? You're all invited on the 23rd of December. Well, everyone, come one and all, and anyone that you pick up off the street, they're invited too. I thought about it afterwards. I thought I could have brought her to that. I sort of just missed the chance. I wasn't ready. I wasn't thinking fast enough, and I was a bit down on myself, and I was praying about it. Thinking about it all day. And I felt like God saying, it's okay. It's okay. You're not perfect. But you're getting there. You're getting it. You're moving in the right direction. We're going to become a church like this that offers love and community to the lonely, that offers healing to those that are unwell or have been hurt, that offers hope to those who feel hopeless. That's the church we're becoming. We're becoming a church where the lost become found in Jesus. We're not quite there yet. I'm not quite there yet. But that's where we're moving. We got some massive challenges. How are we going, Jen and Marg? Am I alright? I'll wind it up if you want me to. Or I'll take the fact that you're still awake that it's a good thing, and we'll keep going. We've got some massive challenges as a church. All year, a group of people have made up a property development task force, and we've been meeting together and talking about how God could empower us to better use this space, and we've got some great ideas coming. There'll be some things to report about that, but there's the question of how we're going to fund what we believe God has for us. Big, big challenges. Next year we're going to start our new variation of what small groups look like. Now, we haven't been running small groups for a while here at the church, and we've done that deliberately, and next year we're going to start that in a new way. And I'm being a bit naughty because I haven't spoken to the elders about this, but I'm going to announce something here. So I'm sorry about that. It's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission, isn't it? I've come up with a really good name for these groups that describe what they're going to be. So we're having a little elders meeting here. Now, if you want to say no to this, oh, I shouldn't even be, I'm off script, but that's all right. This name that I've come up with is not original, but it means something for us. The name is that we're going to start Connect Groups. In fact, next year we're going to start just one. And that Connect Group is going to have a new Gisborne focus. We're going to start in term two of next year. And what that Connect Group will do, we want anyone that wants to be a part of it, and we end up bigger than a small group, we're a big small group, and that's okay, or a big Connect Group. But the Connect Group, it's going to be called Connect Group, or I hope it's going to be called Connect Group, for three reasons. Because there's three aspects of what we're trying to do. We're trying to connect with God together. We're trying to connect with each other in a deeper way and encourage each other in our faith. And we're trying to connect with our community. And we'll have those three elements. I'm going to be talking a whole lot more about that in the near future, so I won't go on. We've also got some challenges in our kids' ministry. This week, John let me know that he's not going to continue on next year in the leadership of his kids' ministry, of the kids' ministry role out there. John has been an important part of our ministry for the last 4 years in that leadership role and a couple of years before that in offering support. And so we're really going to miss John. He's moving on in terms of a new stage of his life, three young kids and a new job that's going to take a lot of his energy. And he's also getting involved in Scouts, which is wonderful. But our kids ministry here on a Sunday, we're under the pump to even run a kids ministry next year. We have two leaders that are committed more than just the occasional week, and we need more. We've got some parents that help out from time to time, and we appreciate that and we love that, but we actually need more than that. We need people that can invest weeks each term. If I ring you this week, it might be that's what I'm trying to talk to you about. Please don't hang up. There's a generation of young people out there who could change our world if there's some people that are prepared to invest in them. Sorry, I'm getting a bit excited. All right, we've got to wrap this up. With 2 weeks to go before Christmas, what I want you to do is encourage you to reflect on what it means to you that He came. You know, we talked 2 weeks ago about the closeness. Last Sunday, Jude talked about how we engage with his story and how his story comes and be part of our story. We could talk about forgiveness. We could talk about healing. We could talk about the breakthroughs that we bring, the love that comes as a result. Because he came. But my focus today is that that which seems impossible to us now is possible in God.